Welcome everyone to our second recording of episode 16 of the Thundercast. On today's show, we're going to be picking apart the rumours surrounding Microsoft's next console and thinking about the next generation of video game consoles. I'm Matthew Sorry, and joining me today I have Shane Ryan.
Hello.
And I should qualify that by saying this is our second recording because I failed to record my voice on the first recording.
Well done.
Mm-hmm.
From the first time the doctor placed you in my arms, I knew I'd meet death before I let you meet harm. Although questions arose in my mind, would I be man enough against wrong, choose right and be standing up? From the hospital that first night.
All right, Shane, so over the past few months, there have been a whole heap of rumors surrounding Microsoft's next Xbox. Supposedly it has the code name Durango. It's going to come bundled with Kinect 2.0, and it might possibly be sold through some form of subscription model. So, seeing as we don't report rumor news at Thunderbolt, we thought we'd round up all these rumors and talk about them on the podcast. So Shane, what do you think about the possibility that you might have to purchase a Kinect 2.0 with the box?
None, because I think it's going to be in the box. And I'll just take a moment now to do two things. One of them is to say that if I suddenly cough at any point, it's because I'm slow cooking a chili in the same apartment I'm currently recording in, so there's a lot of flavors going on.
Nice.
At the moment.
I can smell
and
it.
Also because last time on the podcast, I realized as soon as I said it that I said something along the lines of just providing a critique or just a critique or just a critic.
Yeah.
And just as a negative word, so I'd like to apologize for my error there. And now I've said that, Kinect 2.0 will be in the box.
Mm-hmm.
They're not going to sell it separate because if they do that like they did this time, people aren't going to take it seriously and they'll see it like a gimmick and you'll fall into the trap of games being made exclusively for that control method rather than it being blended into the whole interface where, for example, you can use it on the menu, you can use it to select things, load the game through voice control and the other methods it's already got.
Mm-hmm. And I think they are some of the best implementations of Kinect from what I've used it for so far. Obviously, we've seen rumors that this next version of Kinect is going to have high specs, it's going to be better quality, it's going to be able to detect your fingertips and things like that, and voice recognition, as you were saying just before we started this podcast. It's going to have better voice recognition, so you could possibly tell two different people apart in the same room, which all sounds very interesting. And I think, as you're saying, if it is bundled in the box with the next Xbox, then we'll see a lot more of that kind of implementation of Kinect in lots of Microsoft's first-party games and lots of other games as well.
Mm-hmm. I think it, as well, overall, it will attempt to make it, because they're going to use Windows 8. So I don't think that's even a rumor. I think we can just, it's just going to be Windows 8, isn't it?
Really?
Why would they not? It's all they're trying to reinvent. Like, for example, Apple, which is their real competitor, not Sony, has a look.
Yeah.
And a constant thing. And Microsoft never had a constant thing as such. Mm-hmm. And I think they're trying to lock down to this, whether you like it or not, this Windows 8 look. Now, I don't mean it's going to look exactly the same, but if you've got a PC with Windows 8 and you boot it up and you've got those squares, it's probably like, well, pretty much like the Xbox dashboard at the moment.
You are right. It does look very dashboardy.
Mm-hmm. And it's going to be like that, but with a Kinect, you'll be able to point at the icons or say the name of the icons. You'll be able to point like it's a tablet TV without touching the screen, therefore makes it like a tablet so they can use the same interface, which is the sort of things I expect them to do outside of the games.
You don't think they'll do things like that in-game as well?
Yes, but limited, because you'll have the exclusive a new IP rush at the beginning of the console generation, which we always get, which we really need at the moment. Mm-hmm. So these new IPs better be good. But then after that, it will fade out into everything being third party for the most part.
And then
getting developers to do anything more than maybe being able to point where the start button is when you might as well just press start is pretty limited. Unless it's really easy to develop for and you can just do tick boxes within the development kit.
Do you think we're going to see games that use Kinect to scroll through menus and, like you were saying, detect your fingertips and you have to point at things in the game, but doing things like that that really could just be done quite easily with the controller?
First party titles, yes.
Yeah.
But third party titles, no, because you're holding the controller. Mm-hmm. So it goes back to almost like the Wii U thing where, you know, it's great having that kind of look and you can look down, but
yeah.
At the end of the day, if you're looking down, you're still seeing one screen.
Yeah, exactly.
So that screen could be on TV. You're not splitting your eyes like a, you know, like an Apache helicopter pilot and looking at two things at once. Mm-hmm. You're looking at one screen.
Yeah.
So it's an idea, but you're still looking at one screen. It's not a revolution. It doesn't change anything. So with Kinect, if you're using your hand to scroll, it means you're taking your hand off the controller that you would have used to scroll left or right.
Yeah.
I mean, is it really quicker to wave your hand than it is just to hit the analog stick? No, it's not.
No, but it's cooler though, Shane. It's cooler.
On the adverts for about 5 seconds. Or when your mate comes out, he says, oh, look at this, I can wave my hands. He goes, yeah, all right. Mm. Let's put the football on, and then that's it, the end of it.
I can't help but feel we're going to get some contrived implementation of Kinect that isn't necessary.
Probably Move as well.
Yeah.
Is there any thought of motion controls? I mean, if they were good, they'd be standard, but they're not. That's why we have a controller.
Mm-hmm.
So as an accessory, or as a side addition, especially when you're browsing through stuff, and the audio part, if you can say the name of what you want to launch, I mean, why you can't just click it, but let's just say, for convenience sake, you can't be arsed moving a limb. Mm. If you just want to move your vocal cords a bit, then you can do it. Or the other things that it has as well, for example, the rumour of the eye tracking. So
Yes. If
you're watching a video or something, the idea that, or the rumour that you can move your head away from the screen, it'll identify you're no longer watching it and it'll auto-pause. So
Yes. No
longer do you have to hit the home button to wait the pad to turn on to press pause, you can just stand up and walk out to go for a piss.
That's
luxury.
Just the convenience. That will save me about
2 seconds?
5 seconds of time every day.
Well, over the course of a year, it's worth £500.
Oh my god, that is amazing. The console basically pays for itself.
Mm-hmm. Mm. And if it has a Facebook button, I'm not buying it. Let's just get that out of the way.
You said that now. I bet you will.
No, I won't.
You will.
I wouldn't buy it if it had one. A share button is on PS4 is pushing it, but if it's actually a branded social media site, then I'm done.
They're going to have it, Shane. It's inevitable.
Twitch TV, maybe, but which is something else we can talk about.
I think we'll see some Kinect with Twitch TV. Yeah,
well, there's rumours about that as well, that the reason the Sony using Ustream is that Twitch might already be locked into Sony somewhere. Microsoft in some way. And if you look about certain things they've been advertising, which is some of the, unfortunately, Call of Duty professional kind of league stuff, which is horrible to watch, and just basically a bunch of jocks just yelling at each other.
Mm.
I think that might be part of it, is that they're going to have Twitch TV, and they're going to have an Xbox channel. And they're going to start having their own tournaments and trying to get people watch it, and then have the avatar thing where everyone's sat along the bottom like a cinema, like, you know, churn along and all those sort of things. That's just a side note.
Yeah.
To bring that in. But I think there's a good chance that they could have some sort of agreement with Twitch, and that would be a huge win for them within that sort of market.
I think we'll see, and we'll touch on this later on, but I think we'll see lots, when Microsoft finally does announce their console, we'll see lots of partnerships with different companies like Twitch, different new media things that are just coming out and becoming popular, Vine or whatever it is. Like they announced their connections with Twitter and Facebook.
It's all about services, isn't it?
Yeah.
Rather than actual hardware.
Yeah. And I think we'll see a big push we're seeing a big push of this from Sony, but we'll see a big push towards ease of the user's experience, making it as easy to navigate as possible and as quick to start up, as quick to get in the game. Everything like that will become really important.
Mm-hmm, definitely. Mm-hmm. And the idea that switching between things as well, using a Kinect to use your vocal, you know, recognition so you can, or even like a back button, if they rebrand it, for example, where if you're watching a film and you think, actually, I'm going to wait for a bit, or or watching an episode of something and I've caught up to my friend, so I'm going to press the back button and it's going to go back to the game I'm playing, which is Halo 5. I'm going to jump straight in, play it, my friend comes round, I press the back button and it goes back to the latest episode that I was watching, and then we just carry on. Mm. I mean, again, it's just about, for some reason, it's this obsession with convenience that we have as a especially the younger generations, of trying to save every 5-10 seconds. Mm-hmm. If you see a loading screen, it's some sort of offence to you as a person. So I think this idea that everything just happens all at once.
Yeah. No, I think user experience, ease of user experience is going to be a big push, and I think Kinect's going to be a big part of Microsoft's push towards making the user experience easier.
I think, especially outside of games, I think a lot of people are thinking that, especially people that, as we said before, that have grown up within this generation, and they're sort of attached to this football mentality where you can only be on one side, or like some sort of premiership, and it's just all nonsense, because they're just companies, and, you know, you pick whatever works for you.
Yeah.
And I just, with this sort of Microsoft thing, I think it's kind of hard to sum up, but I think they'd be getting a lot of flack for the Kinect, as if the Kinect is going to be it, and that's it. And Kinect 2.0, every game is going to use Kinect, and you can't do anything else.
Yeah.
And that's just not how it's going to work. It's going to be integrated into certain things, but I think it's going to be more the media services that's going to work. And it's not like they're going to turn around and say, "All right, we've got Kinect. All right, let's just sack the controller, because Kinect is great." You know, they're not thinking that. They're not stupid. The amount of games that, again, data mining, anyone that connects their console to the internet, these companies are data mining you, and they are tracking every single thing you ever click on and spend money on. They know, they probably,
targeted advertising.
Yeah. They know you better than you do, because they're using pure fact on you. So therefore, they're seeing these games, and it's not going to use Kinect all the time. It's just going to be integrated into these sort of services.
Yeah. We've already seen Sony's ideas behind that, because obviously we know they're going to have targeted advertising on... It's basically... I don't think they called it that, but it is targeted advertising on your PlayStation homepage. As soon as you log onto the console, it's going to be adverts for the new demos that have come out, for the type of games that you enjoy and things like that, and the type of films that you enjoy are going to pop up. And Sony said that they will automatically pre-download demos for you for types of games that they know that you enjoy because they've analysed your playing history.
Yeah. And for convenience sake, you know, convenience being the devil, we embrace that. But the truth is that if anyone's listening to this or thinks about it and goes, advertising, it doesn't affect me, you know, I look at billboards, it does nothing to me. No, you're wrong. Because if advertising did nothing to everyone, it wouldn't exist. And if you read up on the psychology and how clever advertising is, and you know, incredibly intelligent people work in advertising and get paid a fortune for it. And to think that because you don't buy expensive clothes, therefore you're exclusive to this, you're not getting it, because the same tactics will be used. And there's something where it's the idea that if you're on certain web pages, which already happens, and you get advertised to, they will put, well, it's the same thing where they don't always advertise what you want. Because then you can tell. So now and again, something stupid, like you might download a demo for a game that you really don't want, and that will probably happen just so that you don't start to think, you know, this is getting a bit weird now. They know the games I want before me, which they do.
Yeah,
because that's how it works. But it's kind of getting to that data mining thing and that always online. And again, we'll talk about always online later. But even with the PS4, so much of the function built into it is all based upon you being online, that I don't think there's going to be that much difference between the two in the way they use advertising.
No.
It's just not going to be branded in the same way that, for example, the 360 dashboard is quite obvious in its advertising, whereas it'd be more subversive in the future, so you won't even be able to tell.
Do you think? I think it's going to be even more in your face.
But it won't be obvious. Like, for example, on the 360, you get non-video game advertisements, and that's obvious.
Yes,
people think that all those other squares around it aren't advertisements. No, they are, because people have to pay for those spaces.
That's a good point.
So don't think that, there's a Coors Light advert there. Oh, advertisement, I don't like that. Oh, this game looks good, I'll click on that. Well, lo and behold, they put an advertisement there, so you think, oh, it's an advertisement, I'm not looking at that, but I'll buy that, because, you know, it's a video game. Don't be stupid. If you think you're, invulnerable to advertising, you're not. It works on everyone, and that's why they do it.
It does. That's why we have so many people in the video game industry with brand loyalty.
Yes, definitely. That's the exactly. That's the biggest case of it.
Sorry, I said people in the industry. What I actually mean is fans.
Followers.
Yeah, followers. Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Anyone that calls himself a fan, you are a victim of advertising. There you go.
The idea of being a fan of a particular piece of hardware or console,
a company.
Yes, you can. Yeah, of a company. That's it. You can like. I like my Xbox as a gaming machine because of the experiences it facilitates. I don't have any feelings on Microsoft as a company because they are a company.
Exactly. And outside of, well, maybe Vita, which was a disaster, it was a pain in the ass. But again, it's just whatever.
Okay, so following on from the rumours surrounding Kinect 2.0, there have also been a lot of rumours circling this supposed new technology that Microsoft has come up with. I don't know if it's new technology, but possible piece of new kit that will come along with the Xbox called IlumiRoom, which kind of looks very strange in the sense that it illuminates the room around your TV, reflecting what's actually going on in-game. So you'll see lights projected around your TV to reflect what the lighting is in-game at the moment, and you'll see basic geometry being projected around the TV. So it kind of expands your field of view on the gaming experience. What do you think of that?
It ties into, to take a bit of back step, there's, I'm in cinema, so you know, they didn't really have it in the UK. They've got some in a cinema in Manchester, but I don't think it's actually in the cinema. I think it might be even like premier seating, like premier, but they have one or two on display and you sit in it. And for example, they'll have like the Avengers film and the seat reacts to how it works.
Yeah, so
I can't
remember
the name
about,
for it.
I don't know. I've heard things called 5D these days because, you're getting
what's
interactions
the fifth dimension?
Outside. Oh, God, I don't
know. I think the fourth one's time, isn't it?
Well, fourth one, yes. The first four, yeah. There's three dimensions in time.
The fifth dimension is cinema.
The fifth. No, the fifth dimension is the next Xbox.
Is that what it is?
Durango.
IlumiRoom.
It's not a new Xbox. It's a whole new dimension to life.
It's a new dimension of living room entertainment. There you go. That's advertising for you.
That probably will be the advertising.
It's true.
Yeah.
But to go back to the cinema thing, I think that sort of idea of how can we make people feel more integrated when they're just sat on their arse. So IlumiRoom is the idea that it takes the on-screen image and then uses some, basically like a small snow globe looking thing to project it up the wall and
okay,
in your surroundings.
Yeah.
And to cover it. So it doesn't extend the image, but it kind of stretches out the colours and like the bold lining of what's happening. So it's not gonna, it's a fine line between projecting something and not being distracting. So you're never gonna have reason to look away from the TV screen.
Yeah.
But it's the idea that how your eyes currently work, when you look at something, you focus in on like a TV screen or a monitor, but you can still preferably see everything around you, even though you're not focused on
but
it.
You so can't see it in detail, can you?
Yeah.
You can't make out the detail.
So I think the idea is very, very similar to that. So it's all about the colours, and the video that's you can watch on YouTube is says it's shot in real time, so it's not been added, and shows the actual device, and it also has like where it'll hit, for example, a bookcase, and it looks like when there's an explosion, there's a ripple. So it's quite interesting. But to give again perspective, is that a lot of companies, a lot of technical companies, have almost a demo or a research department. And what they'll do is they'll have a timed demo product. So they'll either have 3 months, 6 months, or a year, and within that time, they have to come up with a new tech demo. They have to put a product, you know, description together. They have to try and get okay. They have to build it and get it to a demo stage. And then when it hits that deadline, it's over. And the next day, in the office, and they have to start on the next project. And I think this is something that somebody's done. You know, these are very small teams, usually like 5 to 10 people. It's not like a huge team, very small. But I think they've done this, shown this, and Microsoft have been thinking, wait a minute.
Yeah.
This is pretty good. Let's put it on YouTube and see what the response is like. So I don't think so, but I think it'll happen.
Okay. So I'm not quite sure. Was this something that Microsoft released? Was it a video that they released?
Microsoft
or was
Research
it
Department, it's called. But basically,
Microsoft
Research. Yeah.
Okay.
They got the okay, but it's a small team It's quite nondescript because it doesn't even say what part of Microsoft it's from because, you know, it's a huge company. So
I think it's quite an interesting idea. How it's going to work in practice, I don't know. I have fears that it'll be quite distracting whilst you're playing. But also, I think it could be quite good in the sense that of what you were talking about before, in that it only affects your peripheral vision, so it could be slightly more immersive in a way.
Mm-hmm.
It could really bring you into the experience as long as it's not distracting. But it's the kind of thing that I can't say. I couldn't possibly say until I've actually played the thing.
Definitely. It's interesting you said before about immersive and not distracting, because when, if we're going back to the cinema, we were talking before, like 3D is a distraction because you know it's 3D, and therefore it's not immersive because as soon as 3D happens, you think, oh, I'm in a cinema watching a film.
Yeah, exactly. No, I have that problem with 3D myself.
Right. It doesn't make the film any better. And in most cases, like, for example, Dread, it makes it worse because of the colour saturation. So in this case, the idea would be that it's not about them saying, oh, it's immersive. You know, the PR will spin it like that. But it's not trying to pull you into it so much. And it's trying, it's more about expanding the vision of it without being distracting.
Yeah. And if they can use it to do that, then that's great.
Mm-hmm.
But if it isn't, and it's just a gimmick, and it's just for sales, kind of like I think 3D in cinemas is, there's very few films that I've seen that have actually done 3D well or used it for any, anything interesting, then I think it won't work if it's that, but I really hope that it is just immersive.
Definitely. And if we look at what's happening on the PC market at the moment with the Oculus Rift, that is so much more impressive than the Illumiroom thing. That is, you know, that team developing that, and if Microsoft or Sony went to the development team of Oculus Rift and said, we want to make a deal with you to make, you know, to work on making a version for our console, but it's exclusive to this console, that would be such a huge win, because all the YouTube videos, like, the team that made Oculus Rift has currently sent out, the early development kits, which aren't as, you know, which aren't going to be as good as the retail ones.
Yeah.
But they've sent them out, and some of the people that I've bought, pretty much everyone that's used them has been blown away. There's a really good video on YouTube about, like, an old 85-year-old woman who's with the grandsons, and they're showing her the Oculus Rift, and she is. Yeah. It's like, it comes with a tech demo where you're walking around, like, a house and some woods and stuff, and she's absolutely blown away by it.
Yeah.
And it goes cuts, and there's another video with, like, an indie developer who, well, I say indie developer, it's just a guy who likes video games, who's making a 2D kind of Game Boy PC platform with his friend, and he's blown away by it. And then he says, and I started to go in and modify my game to work with it.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, you know, it took a bit of tweaking, but not that much, and I can play a 2D platformer with the Oculus Rift where it understands with my character, because of the way he sets it up, if the character walks behind a waterfall, therefore the waterfall's more in front, and you get this kind of depth and this whole vision. And for those that don't know, the Oculus Rift is like a VR goggle set, but it goes around your whole vision.
Yeah.
So you can't look left or right and not see anything. That's the whole point. It covers everything.
Mm-hmm.
And when you turn your head, it moves. And when you look them down, it moves with you.
So your head is the camera control, and what you're looking is camera control.
There's no longer a monitor.
No.
How it works. And everyone that's used it has come away, but nothing but, like, incredibly positive comments about it.
Yeah. I think you've really hit on something there, Shane. I think Microsoft need to listen to our podcast, because, I think that would be a great idea if they could get Oculus Rift signed exclusively. I mean, it would kind of go against the whole Illumiroom idea in a way, but I've only read positive things from developers about Oculus Rift, which really is a sign that it must be quite good. I haven't tried it myself, but there must be something in it if everyone from indie developers to real high-end AAA developers are saying positive things about it.
And the development team have said that it's making people rethink about game design, because this Dishonored is a prime example of this. In Dishonored, you're effectively a dwarf, because if you look at your size to everything, it's really out of sync.
Mm-hmm.
Really badly out of sync. There's points where if you jump or duck, or you duck and you run and you get up, you can't tell if you ducked or stood up, because the perception's out. And they've said that if you use Oculus Rift on a game like that, it's really confusing, because there's no height perception. So suddenly, okay, the doors are 4 foot high, but it's confusing to what you're doing.
Yeah.
So a lot of, they're saying in development, people have to think more about, if we're going to use this, we're going to actually have to make the door 7 foot and the guy 6 foot to make it make any sense within the world. And I think that's more of a positive thing, because even if you're not using the glasses, it's going to build a more immersive world when you're playing the game.
Yeah.
Whereas Illumi Room's just colours.
It's just colours. Yeah,
it's not going to affect design. Someone's not going to think, I'm using this, I'm going to build it differently. They're just going to think, I built this. It'd look nice if you had a bit of snow as well on the walls.
It's all about immersion, Shane. It's going to immerse you 20% more.
But people that say immersion, they really mean distraction. That's all they mean. And it's not the same thing.
Nah, they mean a sales point that they can talk about.
Yeah, they do. And technology needs to move forward, doesn't it? Makes money. You can't just stand still and go, oh, that's pretty good. We won't do any more controllers after this.
Yeah, yeah. You've got to experiment, and some experiments fail.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, what's next on the list?
Yeah, so next is reverse compatibility. Obviously, we've heard about PlayStation's philosophy with reverse compatibility for next generation. We've heard about how the PlayStation 4 itself isn't going to be reverse compatible with your PlayStation 3 discs, but they are thinking of some kind of streaming solution in the future using Gaikai, where you'll be able to stream PlayStation 3 games, and maybe you can register your PlayStation 3 library and stream those games through Gaikai. It's all up in the air at the moment.
It's very, very complicated. That is not launch. That'll be a long way off yet.
No, definitely, yeah. So I personally myself don't know of the rumours surrounding Microsoft's backwards compatibility business plan for this next generation. Do you know anything, Shane?
There's two rumours bouncing around.
Okay.
So the first one is that they're going to launch two consoles, and there's going to be the new Xbox. And the other part is going to basically be a rebuilt 360, which is going to be much smaller.
Ah.
And it's going to have no disc drive. And essentially, it's going to be their attempt to combat the Apple TV. So, for those that follow video games, Sony is not Microsoft's concern, it's Apple. That's what eats into, you know, their company as more than anything else. So they need to look at a way to combat them, hence Surface, tablet, Windows 8, all these other things. Look, even the way they advertise things nowadays, and the Windows Phone, you can tell they're playing catch up.
Yeah.
And essentially with this, it would be their Microsoft TV box. So they would plug this in as almost as tuner, and you'd get, I don't know, cable, Sky, whatever through it. And it would also play on-demand 360 games and all your current Xbox Live Arcade games. But there'd be no disc drive, and that's where the always online comes from, because that would need to be always online.
Okay. So the idea is that this would be a cheaper box that would need an internet connection, obviously, if it has no disc drive. And it has all the multimedia functionality of the Xbox, as well as being able to play arcade games and downloadable games.
So it's basically stripped down 360 without a disc drive. So loads and loads of kids play Minecraft. And it's priced to be about $100 to $150. Imagine if that came bundled with Minecraft and they advertise like that. It sells so much because that game is doing so well and it's huge with young kids. It's kind of like Lego almost. I always call it Lego for adults, but it seems to be really appealing to younger generations. Yeah, exactly. Well, Lego is for everyone, but it's definitely for that sort of audience and it's doing really well. And another thing that's being rumoured is that Microsoft, again, like if you look at, not really again, but if you look at Netflix, they are currently having their own exclusive programs. Now, the rumour is that Microsoft, Microsoft are now going to do this. And that they're going to resurrect Heroes, but start from the beginning with new people, but tie into the same universe. Mm-hmm. And they're going to look at these sort of TV series that have a fan base and died, and then start them again within the same universes, and then an exclusive funded by Microsoft locked in to the new 360 and the Nextbox, whatever you call it. So rather than just having Netflix, you'd have exclusive TV programs just to the console itself. So you could either go low tier and buy the next box, like an Apple TV program, have your exclusives, have your Zune rentals, have your Netflix and your the Love Theme streaming through that. It's, yeah. As well, you'd be able to play 360 games if you bought a controller. You'd have your Minecraft and all your Xbox Live Arcade market. And if they open that up, you'd have like Windows 8 app games on it, so people could keep adding stuff. And you'd also have these exclusive things. So that advertising potential on that is pretty big.
Okay, so that sounds like it would make sense, considering what we've also heard about Microsoft's idea about how they're going to take this to be more of a multimedia platform and not just a video game console.
That would tie into the smaller unit, definitely.
Yeah, that definitely would tie into the smaller unit. I think that would kind of make sense in a way, because you definitely have this market of people not interested in the real AAA production games, maybe not really gamers themselves, but might be interested in one or two downloadable titles as well as all of this multimedia functionality.
Definitely.
But then if you have the higher-end experience for the people who are really into video games and really want that AAA experience as well as everything else, yeah, that could be quite an interesting philosophy.
Yeah, because all that would be tied in. Then the second rumour is kind of half and half. So one is that box therefore would be backwards compatible, and if you use the HDMI in the new console, which has come about from development kit rumours that it has an HDMI in, but no one knows why, is that you could use that to plug it in, and therefore the software on that would allow you to put the discs into the new Xbox for backwards compatibility, or that there's already a chip being built, because apparently Microsoft's got some AMD guys and some Intel guys over a while ago into a team that no one's really done anything with yet, apparently, is that chip's already going to be in it. So there's going to be two CPUs, essentially, so there'll be one that does all this functionality, the OS functionality, the backwards compatibility, and then another one for the game. So you could have, that goes back to what we were saying before about the idea that the rumours being that they can jump between two things at once. So you'll have a CPU running the games, hit, for example, a button, jump back, and you'll be in Netflix watching a film because it's running on two things, or kind of sitting around.
Yeah, we've already seen that Sony are going to be doing that. They have a lower powered CPU that's going to run background tasks like being able to download games whilst you're playing a game as well on the actual system. And you'll be able to switch between things easily, and this lower powered chip will facilitate that. So I could see that definitely being a feature of the next Xbox.
So it's almost like having two mini little hearts or brains within the consoles itself that are doing two things.
And then surely it would make sense to make that background architecture out of the same type of architecture used on the previous Xbox, so that could be used for the backwards compatibility.
Yeah.
I don't know the ins and outs of these kind of things. I'm not a hardware engineer. Excuse me. That would seem to make sense from a business perspective, because I think Sony not having a backwards compatible system is quite a big, not failure, but a big negative against them, because there's such a huge library of PS3 games out there at the moment. I think any console, it makes sense for it to be backwards compatible.
Yep.
It's going to help at launch, clearly, because you've got a huge library of games ready
to
go.
It's a sense of entitlement expecting a console to be backwards compatible, because, you know, Blu-rays and DVDs, you can't put a Blu-ray in a DVD player and it works. That sort of functionality. You still need to buy something new. But at the same time, having that extra service, which is what the next generation is going to be all about, to be able to play that thing and say, you know, Xbox 720, it's launching with 10 new titles, and you can also play your back catalogue of 500 360 games, all available digitally on launch day. Therefore, saying we've got 500 plus launch titles, you know, it's a big thing.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, very interesting. And just going back to the point you made about Microsoft potentially resurrecting some TV series, I have my first prediction of the podcast. Microsoft are going to resurrect Firefly, and all the fanboys are going to go nuts.
I was thinking that. Maybe just one series, or like a one-off or something.
I think I read somewhere a while ago that Joss Whedon said that he wouldn't do it, but
he's doing films now, so they might just license it off.
Yeah, obviously he's doing lots of Marvel projects right now, but that would be a really clever move on Microsoft's part, because there's such a rabid fan base. I don't know, maybe it wouldn't have the numbers behind it.
The video games with sci-fi fans, you might as well just count them as the same. So if you look at something like that and try and get an exclusive, the internet would just explode in applause.
I don't know. For me, if I was at Microsoft, I would see that as being really, really good PR.
Yes.
Because,
you're resurrecting something that the corporate companies didn't want. You know, you're being someone's best mate.
Yeah.
It's like when you go into Starbucks, this is a weird comment to make, but when I went to Starbucks yesterday, because I was walking home through town and I thought, right, I really want a coffee. And it was just there. I went in. It's, you know, quite expensive. Went in. And they ask you at the till, oh, what's your name? I was like, so you give your name, Shane. And then they kind of use this first weird on, you know, named service because they're your best mate, not a company. And it would be the Microsoft. It'd be the same thing. If they got something like that and relaunched it, they'd be like them saying, no, you know, we're not a massive company. We, you know, we're just a couple of guys chilling
best
out.
We
like sci-fi as well. You know, we're geeks too. You know, it's all that rage. I mean, at the moment with like fashion, where it says geeks on, or geek on like £50 tops and stuff, it's all in at the moment. So yes, I think you're right. That sort of market, definitely.
Yeah, that's my first prediction.
But not your last.
Not my last, hopefully.
So what's next?
Yeah, so we covered reverse compatibility. So let's talk about the specs of the console.
Okay.
So, just to kick things off here, the biggest rumor is that Microsoft console, lots of information has come out about the potential CPU-GPU combination, and lots of outlets are saying, yes, it's going to be relatively similar. Lots of things that have leaked have hinted at the fact that it's going to be very similar to the PS4's architecture. So there will be of a similar power in terms of processing power and graphical power. But the one difference rumored is the fact that Microsoft's console will use DDR3 RAM instead of DDR5, which obviously the PlayStation 4 is using, as we learnt at Sony's press conference. Now, I don't really know the real technical nitty-gritty ins and outs of why that is better. I know that DDR3 is slower RAM, I believe, and it has less of a bandwidth. I might have got that wrong, point me out in the comments.
No, it's pretty much along those lines. Without getting too technical, the summary is,
So I think from what I've read from developers talking about it, and Eurogamer actually did quite an interesting article the other day. I think it was the Digital Foundry guys who do some real in-depth hardware technical analysis on graphics chips and things like that. I think they were saying basically that that's going to be the real differentiator between the two consoles in terms of processing power.
Maybe. Yes, on paper. But if it comes down to, you can have all the bandwidth in the world, but if the CPUs you've got aren't going to be processing that fast, it's like at the moment, you could have, my PC at the moment, I could put 100 gig of RAM in it. But is it really going to run any faster when the motherboard and the CPU is going to be the thing that's choking?
It's about optimization, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. And that's the thing, that's the benefit that consoles have over PCs, is that they're optimized, it's locked down. You don't have to think about this incredibly obscene wide spectrum of setups that you could have. You've just got this one thing, and it allows you to just, you know, chisel away and get more and more power, which is why towards this end of the generation, we're seeing these sort of games that, exclusive games that can almost stand up to the latest PC titles because they're so overly optimized and crunched.
Yeah.
It works like, they go back to Elite on the Commodore 64. It was like 18 kilobytes, smaller than an email, and it had like a whole universe in it because they crunched on it.
If you look at what, like, the Naughty Dog guys with Uncharted on the PS3, they do some incredible things in terms of pure graphical technology because they know that console inside out now. They've made 3 games for it. They're making their 4th game. They know the insides, and they know all the tricks to get the most out of what's available there. And you always find that with them, with console developers, and especially exclusive console developers, because they, after a long time, obviously there'll be the usual advancement of graphics technology on these consoles as the life cycle goes on, like you see on any generation. But I think we'll see really the people being able to draw the power out of that DDR5 8 gigs of RAM.
Sure.
But only in the long run.
Yeah, and with multi-platform titles, no. Because the lowest common denominator rules, so if you need to make a game for Sony's console, Microsoft's console, and the PC, you can't have extra animations. Because if you could, the PC titles at the moment would be running away with loads of extra content, but they're not. They're limited.
No.
Now, you know, the thing about Mass Effect 3 where there's a reloading animation, and because of the PS3 RAM limit that they didn't want to spend resource on working around, they just cut the animation from the 360, the PC one. Now, it's a small thing, but we know that happened. So the amount of stuff that happens behind the scenes we never know about, where they're like, oh, it'd be great if we could do this. No, that one console can't do it, so we've got to cut it. Yeah. So even if the PS3 is way more powerful, it doesn't matter, because third-party titles are going to have to cross over, and it's going to be even more obvious when we have the launches, where you're going to have 360, PS3, PS4, 720 and PC. Like, Watch Dogs are saying, you know, all the PR's going on at the moment, we're going to optimize it for the PS4, this is going to re-change the industry. All bollocks. Because it's coming out on consoles that are currently out, so therefore they've already cut a load of stuff just to get it to run. And it's just all PR advertising talk. Now, down the line, it might make a difference, and especially on first-party titles, say, I don't know, Uncharted 7, or whatever we get up to, that's when you might see that big push. But at the moment, it's just a lot of tech talk. And if you go on a forum and look at people talking about this, everyone's talking about fact, but everyone's arguing. So no one even knows. It's such a mess. And because the internet's full of so much opinion, you can't actually find out, well, you know, is this DDR5? Is it really going to make a difference if the CPU is like this? And that no one can actually say, because there's so much, you know, press talk about it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we don't know. I honestly don't know myself. I'm not really a real technical guy in these hardware terms. Mm-hmm. I don't really know what kind of a difference it'll make, other than the fact they'll have slightly more RAM. So I don't know. They'll be able to put more detail in areas. But really, I think me and you are in the same boat in the sense that I don't really care that much about the technical specifications of the console. Obviously, it's going to be a big improvement, at least I hope it is, over the current generation.
Yep.
But it's more about experiences. I want to see advancement and experiences in terms of gameplay, in terms of things like artificial intelligence and the way that you interact with worlds. I would rather see that advance than, I don't know, an extra few teraflops of brown pixels in Killzone. That doesn't really mean anything to me.
Yeah, AI is... Bar the exception that proves the rule, AI has got worse over the past 2 to 3 years. So, I mean, if we look at recent games like Tomb Raider and Far Cry 3, the AI in that is shocking. It is embarrassing.
I don't think it's got worse. I think it's just stayed the same for a long period of time.
It's got worse. So if we go back to the peak, no, not the peak, but let's say the industry.
Pinnacle.
Yeah. When it hit the mountaintop and someone roared out an intro, holy shit, that's the one. That was Half-Life. And that came out and everyone's like, wow, storytelling. That's it. No more Twitch gaming. Yeah. This is the one. And then we had games like Condemned. Was great. Fear, you essentially versus one enemy type throughout the whole game, but they reacted so well that it was never boring. So you'd replay the same part, you could play through that game so many times, and every firefight, which just felt like something out of Hard Boiled, different things would happen every time, and you'd feel like a real action film. It's so good.
Yeah.
And that's just kind of gone. And it's just now it's just everyone just acts the same.
No,
you can walk up
and
stab someone and the person in front of them doesn't react.
Yep.
In Tomb Raider, they all run into the same spot every time and they'll come down some rappel, even though you've got a machine gun, or they'll stand behind a box, but they'll just pop their head over all the time so you can get a headshot and feel good. And AI has got really poor, and I don't believe we're going to see any improvements. Now, because of graphics, I think we're just going to get more shine, so screenshots look better, so people buy it. And the only way that will change is if some company develops AI. Like, you know, you have Havoc for physics. You see the Havoc logo of everything, because that's the physics behind the scenes.
Yeah.
It's if somebody builds an AI engine.
You mean middleware?
Yes. So they can license that out. That would make a difference. But I honestly don't believe that because if AI was going to change, we'd see it in PC titles right now. Although, that, to be fair, going back to what I just said, it could be that PC titles haven't advanced because AI is limited by current consoles, so therefore that's why everyone runs around. Like every third-person title, you're versus the same people. I was playing Sleeping Dogs when it came out, and I was like, I'm sure I fought this guy 15 times before. So it's exactly the same movement. It acts the same.
It could be middleware already. I honestly don't know. It could be utilising some form of middleware. But I don't know if Euphoria does AI to an extent.
No, that's reaction, isn't it? Yeah. It's how people react to the world. But I never see anything, so I don't think there is, and there doesn't seem to be a push for it, and it's because I'm purely guessing, because in PR talk, AI doesn't mean anything. If you've got a controlled gameplay demo, so you know when you have gameplay demos, like a trailer line saying 100% gameplay, and people watch it going, this is amazing, but really it's a person walking down a very linear control path, and it's not fully open, It's gameplay, yeah, but it's not open.
When you see trailers, some trailers, and when you see like demonstrations and things, and they say, oh yeah, this is in-game, what they mean is visually it's in-game.
Yeah.
Yes, it might actually be being played in-game, but lots of trailers and things are in very controlled scenarios where the artificial intelligence is very controlled, and they might have selected a certain section of the game that really shows it off. Yeah, it's 100% on rails. Yeah, something like that. But bringing it back to talking about technical specifications, yes, I appreciate, yeah, this is a step up in power, but I want to see something interesting done with that step in power other than visual fidelity.
Nothing's going to beat the jump up to the PlayStation 1. If you missed it, I'm not going to apologise, but really, that was the one. If you went into gaming at that time when that originally came out, and I'm guessing a lot of people are like, oh yeah, I loved like games back in the day, but really, most people didn't, and most people got into it towards the end of the PlayStation, especially PlayStation 2. Final Fantasy VII was a big cultural thing in England, and even that's people even playing football and people like that were like, oh, you know, this is pretty good, this. But being there, going from the Mega Drive to the PlayStation was huge.
Mm-hmm.
And nothing has been like that since, and this definitely isn't going to be a jump like that. No. It's going to be about services, it really is.
Yeah, in terms of visual quality, the step up that we're going to see isn't going to be the same, because the clarity of our image at the moment, the clarity of the 1080p image that current generation of consoles can put out, isn't going to change that much. You're going to get higher resolution textures and anti-aliasing and things like that, but it's not going to make the difference that, say, like you were talking about, the leap to PlayStation, or even the leap between PlayStation 1 and PlayStation 2, or even PlayStation 2, PlayStation 3. We're not going to see that kind of leap.
No.
Hopefully we do. Hopefully we see a leap in AI that's equivalent to that.
No, we won't. There's no money in it. That's the honest truth. There's no money in AI.
Mm.
And that's why it won't happen. No. We'll just get shinier explosions.
Yeah. Okay, so powerful consoles, hopefully. Doesn't really mean much unless they can do something.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about the final rumour surrounding the features of the actual box. And we talked quite a bit about this last week, so we'll keep this relatively short. This is the supposed always online functionality, where you will always have to have an internet connection to be able to play a game. This has obviously been one of the biggest rumours that's been around in the past few weeks.
Yeah.
So what do you think of having to have an internet connection at all times?
It's not going to happen this time, but next generation, yes. And a generation might not mean much, but I am pretty sure that when my parents were growing up, they didn't have TVs in the house. Or, I mean, I remember being young and I had a black and white TV in my bedroom. Yeah. So, if that's happened already within
black and white TV, how old are you, Shane?
29.
All right.
So, within that time frame and how quickly it's moved, like mobile phones. So, let's say, if I'm 29, 13 years ago, let's say the last year of high school, somebody I knew got a mobile phone. It was a Nokia. Mm-hmm. It was all the rage. Everyone sat at the back of the class, passing it around, playing Snake on it. And when you sent a text message, you couldn't access the address book. You had to type the number in manually every time. And that was, 13 years ago? So if we think 13 years and we've gone from that to phones that can now stream information, you can walk around in the street and watch a video, you can stream sports, you can watch Skynet, you can do email, you can do text. You could do shopping on it. You could do your banking. There's next to nothing, electronic wise that you can't do on it in video games.
Mm-hmm.
So one generation always on. Yes. For example, Sky
in
England.
But you don't think it's this generation?
No.
No.
Absolutely not. I think there will be between both this console and the PS4, 90, pretty much all its services will be online only. And I think that's where the rumor comes from.
I could see what you were talking about before, around this rumour, supposedly there's going to be two Xboxes, there's going to be one tier that doesn't necessarily have a disc drive, and is like that's where the backwards compatibility comes in, and that's for media functionality as well as some small downloadable games. Then that's possibly where this rumour's come from, and I've seen this said elsewhere that could be where the rumours come from, that one of the SKUs is going to be always online, but not necessarily the main central SKU.
Mm-hmm.
SKU.
Yeah, SKU.
Whatever that stands for.
I have no idea.
Neither do I. I was hoping you did.
No. So I think that's true. And always online, from a business perspective, makes sense because data mining is a big thing. So whenever you're on anything, you know, if you're on your PC right now or you're playing on consoles, these companies or anything, that they are mining everything you do. And that doesn't mean that some guy sat in a chair looking directly onto your PC screen, monitoring what you do.
In the back of your head.
You're just a small bit of data in a massive Excel spreadsheet somewhere. And that's currently telling these companies what to do. So what to advertise you, how to do things, how to control the way websites are developed, how to increase sales because people only want to click here, or if there's a buy button here, it increases the chance of them buying by 5%. All this stuff is happening behind the scenes.
Yeah.
And always online isn't going to happen, but data mining can only happen if you're online. So therefore, the percentages of what they're looking at is people that are already always online. Xbox Live Arcade games, some of them won't work if you unplug your Xbox from the internet, and I'm guessing that everyone listening to this hasn't even noticed, because they are always online.
We were talking about this before, and I hadn't even noticed that. Maybe I don't have any games downloaded that need that internet connection, but that's quite a strange thing, that it's actually already there in some examples.
And going back to, like we talked about before, Half-Life 2, that came out 8 years ago, whenever it was, 6 years, I can't remember the exact date, that you needed to be online to register. And yes. In England at the time, not everyone had broadband.
Oh, God,
it was a nightmare.
The worst dial-up connection ever then. That actually stopped me from playing the game because I had to wait like 24 hours for the actual verification process.
Same here. Well, I was living in a shared student house. We didn't even have a phone line activated in the house, so I couldn't even get as far as a dial-up to do that. But if you think about, again, a perspective, going back to mobile phones, not even having the address book connected to text messages, and going back to Half-Life 2, not having that. But now, Steam is always online. Because you have to, you know, to set things up. Now, I think people think always online means that to play a game, you need to be always online. And I think at the moment, it means more services.
Well, that's the rumour, isn't it? I think
it's 3 minutes and then it disconnects. No, I think they mean services will be like that. In the next generation of consoles, both sides of Sony and Microsoft, yes.
Yeah.
I think you could look at one without, I think you could be looking at one that has no disk drive. I mean, when the PS3 came out, Sony said that the next console would have no disk drive. And they haven't done it this time, but I think next time, I really think it'd be digital only.
Yes, I could see it next time, yeah. I think, we talked about this last week, but I think from a business perspective, Microsoft is a business. It kind of makes sense for them to go always online from the perspective of the fact that it can help them with pirating. They can stop pirates.
Apparently, I don't think there's that much of it. They already do it anyway, because it bans people from the console, so.
Yeah. And they can stop used games, basically the used game market, really. Stop used games being able to be sold.
Or, I think it's more likely they'll allow that by doing an activation fee, and they'll get 50%, and the publisher will get 50%. It'll cost you like £10-15 or something. Market,
Yeah. So from a business perspective, yes, that's great. There are positives. Then I suppose you've got to weigh them up against the negatives of the fact that not very much of the world has a really stable, really good internet infrastructure at the moment.
True, but again, going back to data mining, they're only looking at the audience that does. That's what they're aiming for. So if we look at Brazil, where within that video game community, there's a big rise in them playing Dota 2, and therefore that's online only. And if I was to say Brazil, people aren't going to think, oh, you know, that's got a better internet connection than the US, but that seems to be doing all right there, and that's always online. But I think within England, it's hard to say because we have BT, British Telecoms, and a lot of internet providers use their government-funded copper layout already to provide internet. So you've got companies like Virgin and stuff doing fiber optics and getting up to 50 megabytes and speeding things up. Yeah, I mean, if you go to Korea, you can get 1 gig wireless because when South Korea and North Korea split, the South Korean government invested an incredible amount of money and technology in the internet. So their broadband is insane over there. But I think it's the US that struggles the most, more than most people will think.
There are areas of the US that have quite a bad infrastructure and they can't get decent internet speeds, and this would really affect them.
Especially
if it turns out to be true.
If what they do is 110% believe that Microsoft don't care about anything other than the North American market and they just really want to lock that down.
Yeah.
Which, again, go back to the TV exclusives. if they want to really lock that market down permanently.
Mm, that would make sense. Okay, so we'll wrap this section up here, and then we'll be back in a second to talk about the exclusive games that we think we'll see on the next Xbox. Miami. South Beach, bringing the heat. Can y'all feel that? Can y'all feel that? Jig it out. Here I am in the place where I come let go. In Miami, the bass and the sunset low. Welcome back, guys. Okay, for the second section of the podcast, we are going to focus on the games that we expect to see on Microsoft's next Xbox, as well as any rumoured games we've heard about at the moment. So, I've only really heard rumours surrounding Crytek's Rise, which I believe was showed off maybe at last year's E3, maybe the year before. This is kind of like a Kinect gladiatorial combat game from first-person perspective. Shane, have you heard anything else about any other games?
Pretty much just that, which is Rise. Yeah. It's been bounced around at Microsoft, I think, for a few years now since they showed that. Well, it's not really a demo, but a presentation of it, or yeah, the PR bit about Rise, and it's the Roman bit and features a dog a lot. But I don't think you play the dog, which is a shame because that would be something different.
Play as the dog or Kami style.
Yeah, you can be you first person dog, and you view the Roman uprising just milling about, seeing what's going on. In Kinect, you have to get an awful like pause and walk around your front room.
That would be unusual.
Cock your leg and stuff like that on QuickTime events. But there's still rumours that that's going to happen and be quite Kinect heavy. But again, Kinect, no one really cares. So having it exclusive to that.
Well, the numbers would speak differently, Shane.
Well, Kinect Star Wars didn't save LucasArts, did it?
Oh, that is true. Shit, you got me there.
Dancing away. I mean, no, it happens. They sold a lot, but it's about whether it lasts. It's the same as like, you know, you can sell a lot of stuff, but then thinking, oh, it sold a lot, let's do it again. And then it just doesn't happen anymore, which is why, you know, it needs to be in the box. Yeah. And I think having features, and apparently Crytek are attached to it. Okay. And they're the ones developing
it. Rise. Yeah, it is a Crytek game. Yeah, it is Crytek developed. So I think if this turns out to be true, then I think Rise will be one of the games that Microsoft really used to push Kinect 2.0, what it can do differently. Look, you can poke someone in the eye with your finger. Oh, God, because it can track fingers. Amazing.
Can you imagine the Daily Mail getting hold of that? Microsoft releases Murder Sim. Oh dear!
Even more realistic.
Yeah, even more realistic beheadings.
Yeah, you can swing your arm and behead someone now. So yeah, that makes it even worse. Definitely.
It's like Guitar Hero, but it comes with a sword and you have to swing it about.
That'd be great. Living rooms. Yeah.
Like Conan on the Commodore 64, but it's like Kinect. That'd be brilliant.
Next gen. So yeah, I think Rise could potentially be one of the games that we see whenever Microsoft have their conference, and they used to really show, oh my god, look at what Kinect 2.0 can do, isn't this amazing, next generation, woo. I think that will be one of the games. Obviously we haven't heard anything else about any other games, but come on, it's
still
inevitable.
Still some rumours knocking about. A new Forza.
Okay,
which will be ultra lifelike graphics, so I basically think it'll be a lot like that Drive Club. I mean, Forza games are pretty good.
So, I don't want to get into this, but personally, I just don't like realistic racing sims that much, and I don't really see how they can evolve as a gaming genre.
I don't think anything would beat Ridge Racer on the PlayStation when that came out. That was great. No. I think it only had two tracks. I say tracks, it was one track, but I think it got longer on easy, medium, or hard. But the amount of hours I put into that, such a good game.
Anyway, aside from Forza, which there is clearly a dedicated fan base for.
Two other rumours. One is, this is really original. There's a game with zombies in it. Now, I've never heard of a game with zombies in it. It's really original, so...
Yeah, that could be quite different, actually.
It could be, yeah. There's not many of them with zombie mode. Sweet. So that'll just be a load of nonsense. Mm. I don't care about that. And then there is a talk about a Pixar-style family game where the Kinect will body scan you and you'll be the character in it.
Fabulous. That is just what I always wanted from video games.
body scanning or Pixar games. To be honest,
now all we need is them to be able to scan your brain and literally transplant your mind into the game, and then you can exist in that world.
And then you can play the game while you go out and go to work because you're not even there.
Oh God, yeah, you just have a second consciousness existing
within
the game.
You have an online
entity
when you're not even there.
Fuck me.
It's like Videodrome. Long live the new flesh, Microsoft console.
Or a little bit like David Cronenberg's existence, in a way, kind of. Strange enough.
I don't think it's far off.
So we've heard about
I think a Pixar game would be good. Now, it's not a Pixar game, but a Pixar type. And they tried to do that I want to say Cameo, but that's a Cameo, isn't it? Is it called that?
What, you mean the Rare game from...
Yeah, what's it called?
Start of this generation. Yeah, Cameo, yeah. Elements of Power.
I thought then, it just sounds like the word cameo, but it's just with a K, isn't it? Like, I quite enjoyed that. The first third of it was really slow, but when you unlock all the other powers and stuff, I've really enjoyed that, and the colours, and...
Yeah.
If they did that, I think it'd work really well. But again, if you look at this lineup of possible games against what was at that PS4 conference, it's the same. Because
it is.
They have their own family game, don't they, with that...
Well, of course, yeah. It's like, as a business, they're going to try and hit all those demographics. They're going to have the family game. They're going to have maybe one or two shooters because everyone loves shooters. And they're going to have like fantasy RPG, maybe.
Well, I don't know about that.
Motion control game. Yeah, maybe not fantasy RPG. Motion control game. Game with zombies. And they're basically all the demographics. Mm-hmm.
And then you can have Firefly downloadable digital title to tie in with the relaunch of the series. And you're good to go.
Bloody hell, I'm sold already.
That's it.
Sign me up, Microsoft.
So, indie games. Now, a rumour, again, there's loads of these, but I keep saying it because I don't want someone to say, oh, you said this was going to happen because, you know, this is talking nonsense.
This is the rumour podcast.
It is.
Go wild.
Everything we've said could be utter nonsense and probably is, but it's worth a chat. And is that the backwards compatibility would allow Windows 8 apps to be used in a simple way, so therefore there would, you know how you have indie games at the moment, like Xbox Live indie games, and they've stopped essentially supporting the software that they run on. Is it Game Maker or
yes, it could be,
I don't
know
if they have, but there's some
XNA, is it?
Yeah, XNA, there's some sort of news to do with that where it's either getting limited or it's stopping the support as much, and that would tie into them therefore having their own, again, because Apple is their competitor more than Sony is, of having their own app store like they do on Windows 8. And if they're copying Windows 8, they'd have the app store where if they had games on it, and because your Xbox controller works on your PC, you could just play those games, and therefore people could just funnel out loads of stuff onto it.
So you're talking, are you talking about them using Windows 8 as the what's it called, the, I've completely gone
operating
blank.
System,
yeah, operating
essentially
system,
yeah. So anything that's on the app store for Windows, and therefore people that make indie games for the new Xbox would therefore be on the Windows 8 platform if you're on the PC, because it would cross over, because it would be the same.
Okay, I could see that happening.
And therefore you get loads
integrating, and loads. Integrating PC gaming and Xbox gaming.
Because there's something to be said that when people say indie games at the moment, for example, Journey was an indie game, but wasn't that published by Sony?
Yeah, it was, and it was funded by Sony, and
so
that game company had a three-game deal
not
with Sony. So
indie. Indie is to me, truly independent means you're not published. You're self-published. That's what indie is. So if someone says, oh, it's an indie game, well, was it self-published? No, that it's not really. Well, but then it goes back to music, and people say, oh, Oasis, they're an indie
band.
Yeah,
it's exactly the same kind of thing, isn't it? Where these what we term indie games, it's kind of becoming diluted in a sense. You're right, in the music industry, independent used to mean independent, but now it just means a certain style of music.
Yes, it's the same
certain
again.
Sound. Yeah.
So I think the truly independent, non-published, self-published, or non-published will make sense because it's out, but self-published, they would work here. And you hear a lot of stuff with people apparently being annoyed by like Microsoft and more indie, current indie developers saying, oh, it's no good moving away from it. But again, that's just all PR talk. And you can see these different companies like Crytek seem to come out with a story every week about PC is the future next week. PS4 will beat PC next week. You can't wait until you see what the 720 has to say. And it's just all this industry, more than any other industry, is completely locked down and PR controlled, and it's all like that. So I think that machine. Yeah, exactly. It's all. I don't think it'll be any different. I think Sony are doing really well to lock down these exclusives, and I think that's really working in their favour. Mm. Where it's exclusive to consoles, so if you're on a PC, you'll be playing them 6 months later anyway. But I think I don't think Microsoft have totally ignored that, and I think this sort of indie platform with lots of 99p games might be where they come into play.
I think, though, what we saw at Sony's press conference when they announced the PlayStation 4 is they are really pushing games. They didn't really talk about multimedia functionality apart from like the social integration and social features, but they didn't talk about like streaming services or like, I don't know, partnerships with NFL or anything like that.
I don't know, I came away more thinking about them talking about services. Maybe it's just perception though.
Yeah, but I think Sony are positioning themselves to be a purely games console with the next thing that has these other features, these side things. Yes, you can stream Netflix on your PS4, but it's mainly for playing games. I think Microsoft, as you were talking about them being really in competition with Apple, as them seeing Apple as their main competitor because they see themselves as an entertainment product, not necessarily just a games console. I think we'll see, when they do announce the next console, I think we'll see quite a large focus on multimedia functionality and not quite as much focus on games as Sony had at the PlayStation 4 press conference. And I think we saw Sony push quite hard for indie development support.
Yeah.
Obviously, they got like Jonathan Blow up on stage, which is quite a big thing for me. And we've heard a lot of news surrounding the fact that they're really helping indie developers. We saw what we did this generation in terms of signing deals with, I know you wouldn't call them indie developers because they've signed these deals, but they started off as indie developers. People like That Game Company and Giant Sparrow, the guys who made Journey and The Unfinished Swan. And they've done it with various other game developers. I think we're really going to see Sony push for the independent market. Whether Microsoft can take it back, I don't want to say take it back, but whether Microsoft can provide an environment that's quite as good for indie developers will be interesting, considering how really Xbox Live really gave consoles their kickstart into the indie development world.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
I'm not too sure, because Microsoft will look where the money is. Now, Sony have made a gamble on games. Now, the problem there is the game industry seems to be consuming itself at quite rapid pace. And it doesn't look to have a very good future financially. Now, it seems to be at a base point where the amount of cost of doing things is outgrowing the install base. So the amount of people getting into gaming isn't enough to fund what's happening at the moment. So Microsoft looking at media services from a business perspective is much wiser. Because you might not hit that hardcore market where you're not being sold, oh, I just want games. That's great. Now, you're a hardcore market. We've talked about this before. Tomb Raider was a massive title this year, wasn't it? Possibly one of the biggest so far. Sold 3.5 million, which was 50% of its projected sales. Now, if hardcore gamers can't get together to support a title from almost closing a studio, what hope does a console have that purely aims at that market?
Well, this is the absolute shambles that really is the AAA development community at the moment. In like the sense that they are pumping so much money into these games, ridiculous amounts of money with ridiculous expectations about the sales numbers at the end of the day. I mean, it's just not plausible, and something's going to happen. They'll have to scale back, which is it's just another issue when you consider that they're having to move to next-gen development, which has associated costs, which is quite scary. But I think the AAA development market really is going to have to scale back somehow, or just diversify, as we are seeing lots of companies at the moment diversify into, I don't know, spreading your portfolio, like developing smaller games, middle-sized games, as well as maybe one or two really high-end AAA, high production value projects.
Yes.
So I think we'll see that diversity. In terms of Xbox and what that's going to facilitate, what's that's really going to be the bastion of, I think the Xbox will really be the machine you go to for your multimedia, for your streaming services and things like that. I think they'll really push social features as well, possibly even more so than Sony.
Twitch TV gaming, if they get that exclusive, that'd be huge for Call of Duty. Which is basically their main... I'm sure if they look at the stats of people that play online, they're probably just thinking Call of Duty, Halo, lock that down, Twitch services, competitive gaming, we're good to go.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's something else as well, competitive gaming. I think that the consoles will facilitate that a lot more in future
Which
generations.
Sony didn't talk about at all.
No, that's quite interesting, actually. I think that's something that Microsoft could pick up on and really fly the flag for.
Definitely.
Because if they facilitate that, then obviously all the people, the huge market of gamers that are really into Call of Duty and these competitive titles, would flock to that. If they have a better setup for competitive gaming, that would be really like a sector of the market they could lock down, because Sony doesn't seem to be going for it. But yeah, I think that Xbox will be, just to go back to it, the multimedia platform, as well as
It'll be expensive.
I was going to say like a sector of games, but I don't think that Microsoft is setting themselves up, from what we're hearing and from what we know of what they've done towards the tail end of this generation. I don't think Microsoft is setting themselves up to be the gaming box for the next generation. I think Sony are doing that. You see the amount of exclusive games and first party titles they're pumping out for the PS3 towards the end of its life. And it just shows that commitment towards video games. I don't think Microsoft has. I think Microsoft see the next Xbox as a multimedia platform.
I appreciate what Sony's doing, but from a business sense, I think it's very dangerous.
Yeah.
I think really don't have that clutching straws and holding on for dear life with this, because Microsoft, again, people are going to be listeners going, oh, they're both companies. You know, Microsoft was in gaming long before Sony was, with the PC and everything else, and through what happened there. And they'll be looking at the market as a whole, and they're seeing Apple run away with everything. The Apple TV box. You can imagine if Apple released a console within the TV box. And you could play app games and play Angry Birds on your TV. It'd be over. Mm. It really would. And you're probably thinking, people thinking, no, that's ridiculous, because, you know, proper gamers, core gamers, whatever that means, we'll put the money into it. But as I've just said, Tomb Raider failed.
It's too small of a market.
Yeah, but Bioshock Infinite, I'm expecting sales to come out saying it's a failure. It's going to happen. And to think that a gated console, which is going to come out like £500 or something, £50 games, is suddenly going to resurrect this, when all the games are going to play like games of, you know, Killzone, it's going to play like first person shooter. Look down the iron sights, great. It's not enough. And I want it to be enough. And I want Sony to bring this out and be there like, right, this is it. This is gaming. We're going all back to gaming. It's going to be incredible. And I want that. But on the scale of cost, is that market enough? AAA game and support it.
The industry isn't the same anymore, is it? It isn't the same as when maybe we got into gaming and the PlayStation, the N64 era, when that came along. It's not the same anymore. It's a lot more diverse, and as you're talking about Apple are the main competitor, Microsoft see Apple as their main competitor. The Xbox, the next Xbox, the PlayStation 4, they're competing with smartphones and tablets. Mm-hmm. Which are entirely new beasts that haven't existed anymore. And for a lot of people, the small gaming experiences you can have on your iPhone, on your iPad, on your Android tablet, whatever you've got, that's enough. They don't want anything more.
Definitely. Now, a lot of people say, oh, well, people haven't moved away from console gaming onto this. And that isn't true. Because there's people that played on on consoles at their friend's house because they had a little itch. Like me and you, for example, we're doing this podcast, we write about games, we have a big itch for gaming. We love to be involved in it. For a lot of people, it's not the end of the world. If a video game never came out anymore, it'd be like, all right, okay, whatever. That'd be it. And I've got some friends that I used to play Xbox with all the time. We used to split-screen Call of Duty back when Modern Warfare 1, which was great, and all this other stuff, time splitters. Do they play console games anymore? No. They just talk about this Jurassic Park free-to-play game on their iPhone and all these little things, Monopoly on their iPhone. That's because the amount of time you put into that would probably be the same time you put into a friend's place, but you can do it whenever you want. And it's smaller, and it's non-committal, and it doesn't cost you any more than what we've already paid on. Again, convenience, that's the key word. And a lot of people downplay it, saying, oh, well, you can't play the latest AAA title on iPhone. Yes, you can't. But that's because you've got a big gaming itch, and you want, which is a Hollywood title, I don't want it, but you want it, and that's what's pretty much killing the industry. But for people that are just walking around like, they're probably just thinking, it's a video game, you shoot something. And essentially it is. It's the same game reskinned, that we've seen before, and they're just picking up the cheap 99p version.
Exactly, and I think making that skin prettier and prettier isn't enough anymore, is it? It's not enough, and something big is going to happen to the AAA market, where they have to downsize, they have to spread themselves around smaller scale projects. It just can't sustain itself the way
how much DLC are you going to have to release to support yourself? That's what it's got to now, hasn't it?
It's going to be thousands upon thousands of map packs.
Yeah, microtransactions. Like Tomb Raider came out, and the next day you could change, you could buy different guns. Then I think different jackets are coming out for, and all these little things. And that's how apparently they're going to sustain it. But it's not.
Yeah. But in terms of the next Xbox and the PS4, I think you are right. The PS4 has a very risky strategy of just being the gaming console.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, that really excites me because I've been playing games for a long time. I'm really interested in the industry. I'm interested in the spectrum of games from AAA games right down to the really interesting creative indie game scene at the moment. And if the PS4 can facilitate that, that's great. But I don't know that there's that market there anymore. Which is why maybe the Xbox's focus on being a supposed focus on being a multimedia platform. The one box that you have under your TV that does streaming services, it does all the TV services you want, all the sport you want to watch. It does the social, has the social features you want. You can usually connect with it and everything. It makes it easy, as well as being a gaming platform. That makes more business sense.
Yeah, and if we look at PCs, are down like 25% in a year. On sales, tablets and mobile phones are up. So if we just transfer that over into the living room, people don't want seven boxes under the TV anymore. They want one.
Yeah.
And I think that's what Microsoft are banking on. Again, I think it might be slower for Microsoft because the core market might be a bit But over time, that the advertising push they're going to have, if they get all these, if they have exclusive TV series... Think about the advertising power of that. You could just have a one-page spread in a magazine exclusive to Microsoft.
Yeah.
New Hero series. People are going to be like, all right. What's that about? Whereas if it comes up with like Killzone 17 or, you know, Gears of War 24, people are like, yeah, I don't like those games. I'm just going to skip past it. Whereas this is a different market. It's spreading it open a bit more, isn't it? Microsoft are banking on a wider market, which is slower at first but picks up. Sony going in for the core market, which is everyone pre-orders everything, but afterwards sales dip, which would be really interesting.
Yeah, I think Sony probably sees themselves as the game, being in the games industry and having all of these multimedia functionalities as a periphery, kind of like they're not the main focus. Microsoft see themselves as being the maker of an entertainment product and something that focuses on all of these multimedia functionalities as well as doing games. And I think we'll see that switch in the next generation.
Definitely. It'd be interesting to watch, definitely.
Yeah, very much so. Okay, so let's bring it back to games just for a little bit. Can you predict any games that you think you'll see shown at the Microsoft press conference whenever it happens, whenever they announce their
next
Xbox?
Those four we've predicted.
I mean, obviously, you don't need to be a genius to predict the fact that Halo 5 will be coming out on the next Xbox, Halo whatever it is. It'll be a new
Halo,
Gears of
Halo
War.
2. Totally remastered.
Halo 2? All right, yeah. Oh, yeah, Halo 2 will be remastered at some point. Yeah,
that could be a launch title. That with the original multiplayer, which I believe was huge, completely remastered with all new features on a new engine.
That's quite interesting. Yeah, I hadn't thought about that. Yeah.
Or maybe the original trilogy, like 1 to 3.
Yeah.
All remastered, all done up on
the
new
engine.
No,
that's too much work, Shane. They could just remaster 2 and make just as much money.
Yeah, I'd normally say yes, but this is, you know... You go all out on launch day, don't you? You even release new ideas, so new IPs, things that aren't franchises, so it could happen.
Yeah.
Apart from that, just things... I don't think we'll see things with numbers on the end, but a lot of stuff will be...
I think we'll see,
it'll be franchise stuff, so it'll be like Forza, I don't know, Elite.
There'll be the core franchises at Microsoft. So they have Halo, Gears, Forza.
Yeah.
We might not see Gears, because obviously Gears have been quite
Halo,
a recent release.
Halo, I don't think we'll get a new one this time. Next year... But I think there might be a HD.
Yeah, I think there'll be some kind of remake. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you're right there. That's quite interesting. I think, there might even be a Fable game. Fable's one of their properties. Mm.
It will be Fable 5. It'll be like Fable Next Gen or Revolution or something like that. You know, I think we'll skip numbers at launch and it'll just be lots of...
Maybe you'll play as the dog in Fable, not Raz.
Yeah, I'm up for that.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Because I don't like Fable, but that might be interesting. I'm up for playing a dog. Come on, let's do this.
Incredible. So, I'm trying to think of something. I would love to see Beyond Good and Evil, Microsoft are taking it under their wing as an exclusive title. That's not going to happen.
Probably not.
No. But I hope we hear something about Beyond Good and Evil 2 at E3. Mm-hmm. That's kind of outside of this discussion.
Yeah, E3 is... we're going to have a few people over there, but I couldn't afford it, but really, that would, this year is going to be the year to go to E3. It's going to be absolutely bonkers.
It's going to be quite a big year.
It is. Twitter feeds are going to go berserk. The amount of stuff that gets mentioned.
We're going to get the second-hand experience at Eurogamer.
Yep. But we might actually get to play some of the stuff that's mentioned, so we can hold
out.
That's
true, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would be good.
See what happens there. You're not going to get much better than Condemned for a launch game, so I'm not going to hold out for...
Shane, that. What about Deadly Premonition 2?
Well, the HD thing's just coming out, so I don't think they're going to do that. That game should never have been released.
What, Deadly Premonition?
Yeah, it's too much of a fluke for video games. It's way too independent. It really does not give a flying shit at all. The story is really... It's quite interesting, actually, because a lot of Japanese games, when you think about the story, they're really contrived and there's just some girl with big eyes running around in a little skirt. And then now and again, they'll do something really adult, like Silent Hill 2. Mm. Some of the topics it discusses are really mature. But same with Deadly Premonition, it starts off stupid... And you're talking about sinner sandwiches and there's all this kooky music and you drive around in a car and it sounds like Green Day's playing. And then it starts talking about... And then it doesn't so much as hint as pretty much talk about subjects such as rape and other things. And you're just thinking, this is really dark. And because the game's so daft when it starts, you don't expect it. And that's kind of what makes that game so strong. And storytelling is not going to be the forefront of these release titles. It's going to be what looks better in a screenshot.
Of course it is.
A flashy car. Yeah. There you go. Nice leather interior.
And, individually modelled pieces of grass on the side. That's going to be the future of driving games.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing.
But other than that, I really don't know. I mean, I think there's going to be a strong lineup, but... Because, I mean, Mike, it's been so quiet on the 360 recently.
Oh, I know, yeah.
There's got to be something absolutely blinding coming out. But I don't know what it's going to be.
I don't know.
What companies haven't released anything recently?
In terms of Microsoft, I honestly don't know. I can't. I mean, they've got Rare, but I imagine Rare's working on
that
a bunch
would be
of
that
Kinect titles.
Thing, surely.
Yeah, Rare mainly does. I believe they mainly do Kinect titles.
Cameo 2, but it won't be called 2, but like Cameo Revisited or Resurrection or something.
I mean, I would really like to see a Banjo-Kazooie title, another Banjo-Kazooie title.
Didn't they do one, that Nuts and Bolts?
Yeah, they did Nuts and Bolts, yeah, which I really liked, which lots of people didn't like because it wasn't a typical platformer and it had its problems. It definitely had its problems, but I found it quite charming. Mm-hmm. So I'd quite like to see another of those games, but I doubt that.
But
doubt
this goes back to the thing we said before, like, AAA titles are going to get really boring. Because they cannot risk anything. It's just box ticking all the way with AAA.
You can see
it in like games I've played recently. I'm just like, oh dear. But with indie games, you can because it's small and you can do stuff. And we got to the point where technology, indie games don't suffer graphically. They still look quite nice. Like that Thomas Was Alone I was playing on PC, which I think is coming out on PS3 and Vita soon. I mean, it's gameplay wise, it starts off quite good, but it gets a bit repetitive towards the end. But the way the narration's done and the colours and the way it pans out is really good.
It's a different idea, isn't
exactly,
it? It's something new, which I think Microsoft and Sony really need to foster those kind of experiences on their next consoles if they're going to have any edge.
Yeah.
If they're going to have
to the core
different
market,
in the next generation.
That is.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Because if you look at, they're going to go back to Apple, if you look on the iPhone thing, there is just rip-off after rip-off after rip-off after rip-off. But they all do really well. So it's all about markets and it's, I don't think either of them are right in either of the directions they're going because I don't think anyone can predict how it's going to pan out.
No. It will be interesting to see and obviously we'll do a reactionary podcast when Microsoft do actually have their press conference and we'll see how many of our predictions and supposed rumours come true.
I'm sure we'll do a post E3 roundup in the coming months.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Okay guys, we'll wrap it up there. That's it for episode 16. If you want to let us know your thoughts on the rumours surrounding Microsoft's next console, head on over to thunderboltgames.com and check out the forums, or alternatively, contact us on Twitter @_Thunderbolt, or email us at podcast@thunderboltgames.com. From me, it's goodbye, and from Shane,
goodbye. Jim West, Desperado, Rough Rider.
No, you don't want nada. None of this six gunning this, brother running this, Buffalo soldier. Look, it's like I told you. Any damsel that's in distress, be out of that dress when she meet Jim West. Rough neck, so go check the lawn to buy. Watch your step, reflex, and get a hold of your side. Swallow your pride. Don't let your lip react.